This episode is brought to you by the American Homebrewers Association. Get ready. This year's Learn to Homebrew Day is going to be a smash. Join the celebration on Saturday, November 4th, that's this Saturday, by brewing a recommended smash beer. These recipes use a single malt and single hop and are perfect for experienced and beginning homebrewers. For the official Learn to Homebrew Day recipes, brewing tutorials, and a free brewing book, visit homebrewersassociation.org/basicbrewing. That's homebrewersassociation.org/basicbrewing for event and book offer details. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, November 2nd, 2023. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Chris Colby of BeerAndGardeningJournal.com, an author of Methods of Modern Homebrewing and the Homebrew Recipe Bible, joins me to formulate a recipe for a pre-prohibition American lager. We also taste the smoked oat beer that he and I came up with last time we were together. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And many thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Financial supporters will see an early release this week of the video episode Steve and I shot tasting the porter that Chris and I came up with on an episode of the show. They'll also get that recipe and a behind-the-scenes video of the beer as it came together. I mean, that was a really good classic example of that style. Steve served it at a wedding reception for his son Chase and Chase's new wife Sydney, and people seemed to like it. But that's a great style for fall as the weather starts to cool off. We've had a couple of freezes here in northwest Arkansas already. My habanero and basil plants finally gave up the ghost on Halloween morning, appropriately. But I was able to harvest basil beforehand for a pesto sauce that I froze in ice cube trays. I also vacuum packed and froze 60 habaneros and mixed about 10 or 15 with some homegrown jalapenos to ferment. I've got a batch of sauerkraut fermenting on the kitchen counter too. But fermenting food is just as fun as fermenting beer, I think. But of course, beer is food as well. I got my first disaster show story this week in the email. Asger from Denmark sent a letter with a couple of stories of brewing gone wrong. If you have sent me a disaster show email earlier this year, please send it again to james@basicbrewing.com. My old laptop completely crashed a few months ago. I was able to transfer my emails over to the new machine, but all the like folders and organization of the archive messages and all that went away. So all the old emails are just jumbled up together. So that's a disaster in itself. But anyway, if you did send me a story already in 2023, please send it again. The end of the year will be here before we know it. It's just zooming along this year. So don't forget to get your disaster show stories in. One of the keys to not having a brewing disaster is to use yeast from our friends and sponsors at Imperial Yeast. I'm going to use the current seasonal L26 Pilgrimage on the pre-prohibition lager that Chris and I design in this show. I also used it on the smoked oat beer that we'll taste this week. In addition, I used it to ferment the Kentucky Common that Matt Giovannisi of Brew Cabin and I formulated last week. That beer is already in the keg and on tap. I fermented with L26 Pilgrimage at ale temperature, which might not be the recommended technique, but the beer turned out very well, regardless. I didn't use a starter because I was fermenting warmer, and those 200 billion cells just zoomed through the beer. I kegged it a week after I brewed it. Now with this pre-prohibition lager, I'm planning to make a starter, be a good boy, and ferment in the kegerator at lager temperatures. So I'm following the rules this time. But L26 Pilgrimage has proven itself to be very versatile in brewing clean, delicious beers. It's time to lager up. Ask your local homebrew store about L26 Pilgrimage from Imperial Yeast and check them out at imperialyeast.com. That's imperialyeast.com. Okay, let's talk to Chris Colby about another beer that I used to hear about a lot when I first started to brew. Chris Colby, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, James. Thanks for having me on the show.
We're here to drink beer and talk about another beer again.
Here to drink beer and drink another beer.
I kind of like this recipe development series. We get to drink.
Well, yeah.
While I talk to my friends.
Yeah.
So what we've got, let's see, I'm going to open mine. What we've got here is what we came up with last time we were together.
Yep.
Oh, it's a bit of a hiss. This is the smoked Rotbier or red beer. Oh, okay. And this it's carbonated now. I postponed. We were supposed to talk about this last week, but I postponed because the one that I opened as a test the day before we were supposed to speak, it only had just a little bitty hiss, and then and that was it. And then it was flat as a pancake. But now, boy, this is a beautiful beer. Said the guy who made it. How would you describe? I'm going to take a sip while you describe what you're looking at and what you're smelling and what you're tasting.
I heard it's all in the recipe, really. So I'm going to go ahead and take credit for.
Well, you're right there.
The ones you sent me they carbonated a lot faster than yours because they got the, you know, bumpy ride in UPS through the heat. So they, you know, the yeast got some heat and some agitation. So yeah, mine carved up right nice. And yeah, the colors is just excellent. Sort of like
red,
sort of like a Marzen-y color, but like with a little bit more towards the reddish.
Yeah.
You can definitely smell the smoke in the nose. It's a nice foam. It's malty enough. There's certainly enough bitterness to balance the maltiness out. And it's not, I don't know, it's not super dry, but it's not super sweet either. It's sort of, you know, like full bodied, but not syrupy sweet.
The smoke is not acrid.
No.
In fact, I think it's a little sweeter on the back end than I thought it was going to be. I like it quite a bit. I mean, I think it's got you know, roastiness to it. It's got a caramely, like I say, a little caramely sweetness at the end, but not too much to make it, you know, like it's not sickeningly sweet. Super drinkable. I get the smoke more in the nose than on the flavor, I think.
Yeah, there's quite a bit in the aroma.
Is it you're the smoked beer guy? Is it smoky enough for your taste?
Yeah, I like it. I would have gone nuts and added, you know, much more, but that's just me. I mean, I like drinking a campfire, you know. But yeah, I mean, this is good. It's certainly for someone who likes smoked beers. It's, you know, there are smoked beers out there in commercially that run the whole gamut from, like, you know, Eichs Schlenkerlerock beer, which is just, you know, like a wall of smoke smacking you in the face, and to others that are, you know, they're much more subtle. I mean, this has got enough that someone who likes smoked beers would like this. You know, they might want a little bit more, but then, you know, that's, they always do. So.
And I think it was very cleanly fermented. It's very clear.
Mine is crystal clear.
You know, it might be one of the more clear beers I've ever made. mine aren't usually this clear.
Did you fine with anything?
I don't think I did because this is a small batch. Well, let me talk about the recipe before we get too much further down the line. But this is a 2 gallon or 9 liter batch. It into 3.5 gallons or 22.7 liters of water at 158 degrees Fahrenheit or 70 C. I put 3 pounds or 1.4 kilograms of cherry smoked malt, 4 ounces or 113 grams of Cara Red, 4 ounces or 113 grams of Cara Munich 1, 5 ounces or 142 grams of Munich 20 Lovibond Munich, and 1 ounce or 28 grams of black malt. and I rested in my oven, which was set to 150 degrees Fahrenheit or 65 C for 60 minutes. Then I at the beginning of my boil, I put in 10 grams of Northern Brewer at 7.5% alpha acid. And I say full boil because I guess I added way too much water because I wound up boiling for 2 hours on the stovetop. I boiled for 2 hours to get it down, you know, near the starting gravity that we wanted. In 5 minutes at the 5 minutes before the end of that boil, I put in 7 grams of Northern Brewer. But the original gravity was 1046. The final gravity was 1010 for an ABV of 4.7%. I fermented with a whole package or whole pack of, even though it was a 2 gallon batch, a whole pack of L26 Pilgrimage from Imperial. I pitched at 55 degrees Fahrenheit or 12.8 C. And what I did was I put the jug, the 3 gallon water jug from the, you know, hardware store, which is what I use to ferment small batches. I put that into my old keg cooler, into some water that was the proper temperature. And then I put a, you know, I've got one of those thermometers with a long, you know, temperature probe on a cord, like what you use for barbecue and such. So I could keep track of the temperature easily. And then what I did was I kept putting in those reusable ice packs in the water surrounding the fermenter. So I was able to maintain the temperature, you know, at or around 60 degrees Fahrenheit for the length of the fermentation. And then before we went on vacation, I took it out for a diacetyl rest. And then we went on vacation. We're gone for, you know, 10 days or 11 days, whatever. And then I bottled when I got back. When I got back, it was super clear. Pilgrimage really flocculated very well. In fact, I was kind of worried that, you know, I was kind of concerned, is there going to be enough yeast in suspension to carbonate the beer? Obviously, there was. I think the Pilgrimage, especially fermenting, you know, at, you know, lagerish temperatures, I think it fermented extremely cleanly. And I think the beer is way, way good.
It is good. And one thing that might explain the clarity a little bit, I remember like way, way back in the day when I was just learning in somebody's books, maybe it was a Papazian book even, I can't remember, but I read somewhere that like small amounts of dark malt or I guess also larger amounts made for clearer wort and clearer beer. And I mean, I've never like tested that exactly, but it seems to match up anecdotally with my experience. Like I don't recall ever brewing a porter that turned out cloudy. And I was on the huge porter kick for over 20 years. And, you know, also I've never brewed a stout that, you know, once you shine a light through it, that it looked cloudy. And so I don't know, there's, you know, and I don't know what it is. You know, if it's tannins or whatever, if it comes from black malt, but it's at least other people have floated the idea that it supports clarity, and my anecdotal experiences would say I agree with that.
Yeah, I usually use a Whirlflock tablet, but on small batches, I usually forget. It's just because I'm out of my routine. But I don't think I added one in this batch. Is there anything that you would tweak on the recipe? Certainly the 2 hour boil didn't do it any harm. I mean, it's not too like astringent or, you know, from the hops or anything.
I mean, it would come down to not that there's anything like wrong and improve it. It's just how, you know, my own personal tastes. Like I might I might go shoot for a little bit drier and a little more smoke in there. But that's, you know, that's not saying that the levels, I mean, there's, we tried to brew like a, you know, a red beer and a smoky one. And this, you know, this hits those targets.
So would you, for your own preference, would you back off then on like the Kara Red and or the Kara Munich, and then add, you know, maybe a little more of the smoked malt, base malt?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd back off on the Kara Red because it's, you know, that's, I think, what's mainly giving us the color there.
Good point.
I would, you know, I like, and I mean, I, every beer I brew, I like make it like two notches drier than, you know, anyone else would like, or not anyone else, but most people would like it. So, I mean, I'd probably just go for like a step mash or something, like mash in at 140, let it sit for a little while, and then, you know, ramp it up to 152 or whatever. Yeah, but that's, again, just me being a grumpy old man.
Surely not. Well, this is a beer. I'm kind of sad that I didn't make a quote unquote full, you know, 5 gallon or 19 liter batch, because it's really good. I mean, I say that it seems like I say that every time I brew a beer and talk about it on this show, but I think it came out really, really well. I think it's really well balanced. I'm not sure that I get a lot of hop, you know, I'm not sure that those hops at the, you know, last 5 minutes of the boil did anything, because, you know, I'm not getting any hop aroma or, you know, any hop character. But the bitterness is certainly solid. I love the maltiness. I like that little sweetness at the end of it. And I like that the smoky character is more in the nose and not tasting it, because, you know, it's not acrid in the flavor of it. So I think it's just, you know, I don't know anything that I could just pick on it. So anyway,
of the beers we've formulated, what's your favorite so far? I sort of like the Texas table beer.
That was a fun one.
I liked it too.
Yeah. I'm still going to stick with the big hoppy honey IPA one.
That we did. That was a good one.
Yeah, with the what do we have? Amarillo and Amarillo and Nectaron. That was a way good beer. Of course, that was you know, right up my alley. It's a 6.5%. You know, super hoppy, juicy beer, you know, and I could drink those all day and then get in trouble. But, I think that maybe this one is a close second. I don't know.
I was going to say, this is pretty good.
It's pretty good. And that porter we did together was also good.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think we're on a roll.
Yeah, I like, part of the reason I like the table beer is I've been trying to lose my beer gut, and that would have been a good. I should brew that again, you brew it, but I should I should brew the beer that you brewed again.
There you go. I've ordered the ingredients for the pre-prohibition lager already from our friends and sponsors Desiree and Dave of HighGravityBrew.com. The Build Your Own Beer page on HighGravityBrew.com is really fun and easy to use, as is my Warthog electric brew-in-a-bag system from High Gravity. See what I did there? Chris and I will talk about strategies to do a step mash with this beer. In the past, with my old propane system and cooler mash tun, just hitting a proper single mash temperature is challenging, and figuring out how to ramp up a mash? Forget about it. Whether you're a single vessel brewer like me, or if you like the fancier two or three vessel setups, HighGravityBrew.com has a Warthog turnkey system that's right for you and can take the pain out of propane. Or you can just get a Warthog controller and components if you want to engineer your own setup from existing gear. Dave builds those systems and controllers himself right in the back of the shop in Tulsa. And if you go to HighGravityBrew.com and use the code EBC75BB, you can save $75 off your Warthog purchase. Desiree and Dave will take care of you. If you ever have an issue or a question, you can talk to them and get it worked out. They've certainly taken care of us here at this podcast for many years. Show your thanks and send them some love by visiting them at family-owned and operated HighGravityBrew.com. That's HighGravityBrew.com. Well, we're here to – maybe we can extend our record of collaborating to make good beers together today.
I'm sure we can, given that we're the judges.
Nobody else has tasted it.
I'm pretty sure we can meet ahead of time and say, oh, look, this is terrible, but just say it's good.
No, I think that if we come up with a bad beer, I'm going to tell people because this show's all about learning, and I don't pretend to be the best brewer in the world. So if I screw up, I'm going to tell people. I don't care. I've got no pride in being the best brewer in the world. But anyway,
The biggest two things in consistently brewing good beer is just being very careful about cleaning and sanitation and pitching an adequate amount of yeast.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's more to it, but like if you get those two, then you're, that brings you at a minimum, to the ballpark or at least the gates of the ballpark.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not going to be nasty. It might not be exactly what you planned, but it's likely not going to be, hard to drink.
Yeah. If you add to that list just getting fresh, good quality ingredients, then you're in the ballpark.
Yeah.
And then from there on, it's tweaking.
For sure. Well, I've got another packet of Eben from Imperial sent me three packets of L26 Pilgrimage. I've got the last one down in the beer fridge in the garage. And so I was looking at... and again, the BJCP app, and I searched for lager. And one of the things that came up was the pre-prohibition American lager, which is another one of those beers. I recently brewed, collaborated with Matt Giovannisi on a recipe for Kentucky Common, which is another one of those recipes that, you always heard about, or at least I did, when I first started home brewing. It's like, oh, this would be a fun beer to brew because you can't get it anywhere, And it's, supposedly got some historical aspects to it, whether or not those stories about the beers are true or not. But it's kind of like the old-time romanticism of being a home brewer and getting to brew beers, that you couldn't find anywhere else. So what is a pre-prohibition American lager? And is everything about it that we hear true?
That second part's a really good question. But the basic idea behind a pre-prohibition lager, and homebrewers used to call it a classic American Pilsner, CAP. The basic idea is it's an American beer, like an American Pilsner with, a little bit more, a little bit higher in alcohol, a little bit higher in hops. And some people used to say it was a little bit lower in adjunct usage. I'm not sure about that last one exactly, but, whatever. The interesting thing about, I would never try to brew one of these and tell myself that this is I'm recreating the past, because, there's different malts today. There were, American 6-Row and American 2-Row existed back then, but they were different varieties of, barley, and the malting specifications were probably similar, but maltsters are just better these days. Mm-hmm. And, likewise, the hops back then used to, they didn't have the high alpha hops like we have now. The yeast is probably, comparable. I don't think lager yeast has changed, that much, or at least there are strains that have changed little since it originated. But then again, I think you probably brew something that was, recognizably of that style. If you could, teleport somebody back from that time to now, you know. But yeah, I thought when I was thinking up the, you know, what to talk about today, I was thinking like I'm gonna approach it more like, let's take those ideas as what we want, like a slightly bigger beer, a little bit hoppier, and then just sort of make that a good beer. And if it's historically accurate, then, you know, good for us. If it's not, if it just turns out to be a decent beer, like, you know, well, that's not terrible either.
There's nobody around from pre-prohibition to taste it and say we're wrong. So, you know, so what should we start with? What, first of all, have you got your spreadsheet open? We can just jump right in and
let me open my
start figuring
the sheet of the spreading.
But I think this is going to be a pretty straightforward one to put together.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I'm assuming back then, you know, just like with the Kentucky Common, they were probably using 6-row a barley. But do we necessarily have to use 6-row in our version?
If you want sort of make any pretense to having it be correct, yeah, that should be some. I've brewed a couple pre-prohibition, at least pre-prohibition-esque lagers. You know, I wasn't shooting for historical accuracy, but I usually did a blend of 6-row and 2-row, and you know, it's turned out good. You know, I think a little bit having two pale malts, you know, they're very similar, of course. But just adds a tiny bit of like depth to the malt character, which is of course low.
Mm. Yeah. What theoretically nowadays? What's the difference? I mean, why? What's the difference between American 6-row barley and 2-row?
Very from like a flavor standpoint, very little. 6-row barley's. Their protein content ranges from anything from like about 12 to about 13.5. There's generally anything above that isn't used in brewing. And for 2-row, it's basically 11% to 12% protein. So they're very similar in flavor. They're 6-row is generally it's higher in protein and then also has a higher diastatic power. And sort of on average, 2-row kernels are going to be a little bit plumper than 6-row, but that doesn't always happen. A good crop of 6-row can come in and beat out a mediocre crop of 2-row.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so you know, 2-row's a little bit plumper, a little less diastatic power. Like yeah, an American 2-row, a lot of them are around like 120 dp, and where 6-row is more like 160. And so, yeah, if I go sort of lower on adjuncts, I might go a little higher on the 2-row. You know, if I go a little higher on the adjunct percentage, a little more on the 6-row to just give it that, you know, the power to chew through all those starches.
And I guess we shouldn't assume that, you know, listeners know what we mean when we're talking about 6-row versus 2-row. It's basically how the kernels are arranged on the stalk, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and 2-row barley, the kernels are opposite each other. There's two rows, and it's just, you know, on the left and on the right, and they're just immediately opposite each other. And in 6-row, there's like three rows, but then, you know, there's both sides, so there's 6-row, and they're a little bit, they're a little more. A chemist would say sterically hindered, you know, they're packed in there a little bit more. So there's, if the kernels grow big enough, they start interfering with each other. And, yeah, that's just the difference. Just, how the kernels are arranged on the head.
Well, we can be authentic. We can go, 6-row, barley if, and you want to, I'm pretty sure highgravitybrew.com has 6-row. I will check just to make sure, but I'm sure that they do.
How How high do you want to go on the adjuncts? Like, to be anywhere in the sort of reasonable range, it'd be 30 to 40% of the grist.
Ooh.
And then if it's closer to 30, we can have a nice blend of 2-row and 6-row, although it'd still be mostly 6-row. And if it's all the way up to 40, then it's like we could almost go 100% 6-row.
Well, they do have RAR 6-row at highgravitybrew.com. I assume they
There you
would.
go.
I don't know. What do you think? I mean, I want to use rice because I used corn in the Kentucky Common, and they've got flaked rice at high gravity.
Okay.
So I don't know. What do you think percentage-wise?
I'm gonna shoot for like dead center, 35.
Okay. And I think I can only think of one other time that I've actually brewed with rice, and that's when I made a small batch, or no, maybe it wasn't a small batch, but I made rice in my Instant Pot to gelatinize it, and then put that in the mash. And I think I remember that being a good beer. I think that was just a Pilsner. But I don't think I've ever used flaked rice. I might have used puffed rice before.
Do you want to use flaked rice or do you want to go with rice? Full on double North American double mash.
Cereal mash.
Or a cereal mash, yeah. Okay. It's up to you. But flaked rice is certainly much, much easier.
Yeah, I mean, I've done cereal mashes. I've done decoction.
I've done cereal mash.
I
Don't
mean,
try to tell me about cereal
no,
mashes.
I mean, yeah, you know, I don't have anything to prove. I'd rather go with the flaked rice. And, you know, if we do flaked rice, I mean, we could talk about what you have to do a cereal mash.
Right.
But if I
Okay,
had if
we'll
I
go
had
with
my
flaked.
druthers, I would just rather mix it all into the, you know, into the mash. And if you have flaked rice, it's pre-gelatinized, right?
Right.
So let's go
This
that
is
way.
okay, so for a 5-gallon batch, I don't know if you're gonna make 5 gallons, but
Yes.
I've come up with if we go with 5 pounds of 6-row, 2.5 pounds of 2-row, and 3.5 pounds of flaked rice, that brings us to 1060, which is that's at the top end of at least what the BJCP would recommend for one of those. And that'd be a close to 6% beer
Okay.
if it ferments out well.
Okay. So if I wasn't being lazy and if I had to if I wasn't using a pre-gelatinized product like puffed rice or flaked rice, what then must I do?
If you wanted to go like a full on, what hum or what homebrewers call a cereal mash or what pro brewers would call a North American double mash, you would take the rice, which has a protein content around 3%, and you would put whatever the weight of the rice was in a pot, about 10 to 15% of that weight with crushed malt. Cover it with water and boil it for about 15 minutes. And that would basically gelate the starches, or as homers would say, gelatinize the starches. And the small amount of barley in there would just sort of give you a start on a little bit of starch conversion. And then what you'd do is, so you had this thing, the cereal mash that you boiled for 15 minutes. If you at the same time or like slightly before you started the cereal mash, if you mashed in the 6-row and the 2-row and at a low, relatively low temperature, like 140, then you dump the mixtures together and stir it up, and that should bring your temperature up to a reasonable sort of starch conversion temp. And like in practice or in theory, you can calculate, how much of this and how much of that are you going to add, or you can follow a recipe. But in practice, because I've done this a couple of times, it helps to have some boiling water on hand and some, cool water on hand, and, dump the mashes together, stir them, maybe let sit a minute, and then check the temperature and adjust as needed.
Or you could use a brew in a bag electric system like mine, and then if you miss your combined mash temperature on the lower side, you can just crank it up or just set the temperature controller and stir, while it comes up, kind of automatically.
Yeah, if you can heat your mash tun, that's a big help. A lot of people mash in coolers though. Either way.
Or you could use flaked rice. Just be lazy.
If you're like, I want to carry on an American brewing tradition like the old guys used to do, then yeah, use rice. If you're like, I would like to shave an hour off my brew day and,
at least
do something else, then go with flaked rice.
So could I get away with, or should I do a single step mash if I'm using the flaked rice and along with the 6-row and the 2-row, or should I, since I do have the temperature control in my mash tun, essentially, should I go to the extra effort to do a step mash, to start low and kind of bring it up?
To what degree would you like this to be a dry? I mean, it's the style is fairly dry, but like on within the parameters of the style, like do you want it to be on the drier end or?
I do like malt, but if the style is dry, then let's go dry. Reasonably dry.
One thing you could do then with the flaked rice, you could mash in at 140 and then just set your temperature control to 152 and just have it ramp up through that range.
Yeah.
And that'll, by the time it's done, that'll be sort of like a low temperature rest.
Yeah.
Or, if someone was doing it in a cooler, you could, mash in at 140 and then pour in a bunch of boiling water to raise it to like 152 or, ballpark of that. But yeah, if you can ramp your temperature up after the initial mash in, do that. Yeah. And if someone out there wants to make like they're like, I want mine, dry as a bone, mash into 140 and let it sit for a while, like an hour, maybe even 2 hours, and then ramp it up, and you'll have a nice dry beer.
So I'm assuming that the hopping strategy is going to be pretty straightforward on this one as well.
Yeah, American Pilsners don't have, there's basically no hop aroma to them. And there's, at least for, non-lupulin shifted palates, there's enough hops to balance the sweetness. And so, you can add finishing hops, like aroma hops if you want. But I think you're probably going to be better off and also like if you want it to be any sort of nod to the actual historical style, just add hops to hit your RBU target, which I don't know, anywhere from 30 and 40 is good. So, that's like that's in the American pale ale range, not IPA.
So do you have any favorites on the hop style or the hop variety?
You can use anything that's reasonably neutral, including noble hops. I sort of, I've made a couple of different kinds of things that they're supposed to be. And I used Cluster because that's an old variety. They actually used Cluster back in the day and it's still available. Although I'm guessing it's a lot higher alpha than it used to be. And that's a good one, but pretty much anything except I wouldn't, unless I was specifically making it a hybrid style, I wouldn't use any of the, passion fruit, New Zealand style, super, super fruity, because that just wouldn't be what you were shooting for. So, anything neutral. This would be a good one to take some, like, really high, like a Magnum or something super high alpha, and just because that just minimizes the amount of plant material in your kettle and cuts down on the size of tube and
so around 35 IBUs, something around there.
Yeah,
so in theory we could do like a no chill brew with this, but we're going to be pitching at lager temperatures. So generally what I do is knock off the first heat with whatever the temperature of my garden hose water is, you know, get down to like 100 degrees Fahrenheit, 37 C, something like that, and then use my little cooler with ice water in it and a submersible pond pump to then switch over to recirculating that ice water through the immersion chiller to chill down the wort to probably pitch at like 55 to 60 degrees Fahrenheit, around 15 C, something like that.
Yeah.
And what I can do is I do have a keg in my kegerator, but what I can do is I can take that keg out and then put it into my keg cooler with some ice and keep that beer happy while I use the temperature control on my kegerator to ferment this one. Because I do want to, you know, do more of a lager, strict lager fermentation with this one.
Right. And, I mean, that's a good idea because this, the overall amount of, you know, hop bitterness is low. The malt, you know, character is low. And so, you know, the fermentation characters are really going to stick out.
Yeah, there's nowhere to hide. with the smoked beer, the smoked Rotbier, it's got that smoky malt in there, so that, you know, you can hide behind that a little bit. And not that I needed to, because I think it fermented well. So what about and then obviously, you know, after primary or just as primary fermentation is slowing down, I would want to, you know, take the beer out of the kegerator and let it, you know, kind of warm up to room temperature to do a diacetyl rest to let the L26 pilgrimage clean up, you know, any butteriness that might be left over. What about water? If I'm looking at my brewing software, you know, what water profile should I be looking at?
Yeah, for a real pale beer like this, and something that doesn't have, you know, a ton of hoppiness that you would, you know, need to accentuate with water chemistry, basically just use water with, you know, low amount of carbonates, you know, what they might call soft water. And then just if you need to adjust the amount of calcium, like if you're anywhere within the 100 to 150 parts per million range for calcium ions, that's good. So a real simple water profile. I mean, if you built it up from like distilled water or RO water, you know, all you need to add was like a little bit of calcium chloride or a mixture of calcium chloride and gypsum, something like that. Yeah, water here is not that complex.
Cool. So we'll ferment with the L26 pilgrimage and everybody will be happy. Hopefully, I mean, this is it sounds like a super simple beer, but sometimes the super simple beers they show off the flaws in your brewing ability, you know. So this one might be a little more challenging just because I got to pay more attention.
Yeah. I mean, the style is all the skill of the brewer. Like you can, you know, you can vary the amount of the malts, you know, the ratio of those two. You can vary the rice and the corn and you know, different yeast will give different profiles. And so but basically they're all, you know, light in flavor. They should be nice, crisp beer. And if they turn out good, it's the skill of the brewer, you know? And if you also, it's funny. I mean, I used to, people would ask me for like clone recipes of like a specific like American Pilsner beer or a specific, you know, like they want Heineken specifically or, you know, Modelo. And, you know, I'd have to tell them that like you know, as a home brewer to hit, you know, really hit that profile, you would have to work a lot,
mm-hmm.
You know, you'd have to go through. I mean, then there's hints in the homebrewing literature what yeasts, you know, different breweries use, and you'd have to go through and find that, and you'd have to just try. And but it would be really hard to just like flat out mimic one. Like you could brew one that enough that even someone who is familiar with this style and a particular, you know, taste sense of, yeah, hey, this is pretty good, it's pretty close, you know. But like you as a homebrew, you probably couldn't fool like, you know, the tasting panel at Budweiser. So it's, you know, there's a lot of little variations, you know, and I would say probably the biggest thing that's going to make these beers a little different is the yeast, you know. And there are, you know, in the homebrewing literature, there's hints to, you know, the characteristics of different yeast. And, you know, for something like this, anything that's labeled like an American strain or a Mexican strain is going to work pretty good. But, you know, so will, you know, so will any of the European ones, really.
And I think I will make a starter. If we're going to have a beer that starts out at around 1060, you know, I will dust off the stir plate and do a starter, even with the fresh packet of Imperial L26 Pilgrimage.
That will be well worth it, because you really, on something like this, you want the yeast to get started really quickly and start fermenting. So, yeah, I would recommend a starter.
And if I overpitch, you know, and it blows through the fermentation, so what? We're wanting it to be a clean fermentation anyway, so it's not going to hurt anything.
Right. Another thing you might want to do is get some, PVPP. It goes under the brand name Polyclar, and there's different versions of it. But it's a fining agent that you use on finished beer. And with something like this, like low color, you know, and the style itself is supposed to be crystal clear. A little bit of, and there are, I actually looked today, there are a zillion different finding agents out there. And, you know, I haven't personally used all of them, but I used to use Polyclar AT, which I don't think that version isn't popular anymore, but it worked great. And it was simple. I mean, you just hydrated it and dumped it in the fermenter after the beer fermented, you know, about 6 hours. I mean, I gave it overnight, but you know, it's all fermented, or it's all, you know, fallen to the bottom of the fermenter, and then just rack the beer off the tube and you're done.
There you go. Well, all right. Well, I look forward to brewing this one. It'll be a nice drinkable beer to go through the holiday season. And then I'll, when it's done, I'll send you some.
Good. I like beer.
Turns out.
Yeah.
All right, Chris Colby. Thanks again for your help.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and if I don't talk to you before then, happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and happy Halloween. It's tomorrow, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, thanks again to Chris. There are a bunch of recipes designed by Chris in his homebrew recipe Bible. And there's one by me in there as well. It's always fun to talk to Chris. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Hey, and send in your disaster show story to james@basicbrewing.com. Don't forget. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Till then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.